Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Newsweek's Foreign Service. I'm Miren Gitter.
And I'm Josh Lowe.
And each week we take a look at the big stories in the US and what they mean for the rest of the world.
So this week we're having a look at satire and how to be funny about people who are so inherently ridiculous that it almost feels like you can't make fun of them. So I'm thinking here of politicians like Nigel Farage, like others involved with Brexit, but particularly about Donald Trump.
Yes, because how do you satirise Trump, who is just such an extreme, like so much of what he says is so completely ludicrous. But we know from having seen his Twitter outburst that if you go after Trump, if you laugh at him too much and push him too far, he has a tendency to fight back.
Yeah, and there's another issue associated with this as well, which is this idea of fake news, all this mad misinformation flying around, poisoning our politics. How do you make satirical news or satirical content of any kind when you've got to worry about misinforming the public in that way?
So satirists have that to worry about. People might take their articles as genuine when they're not, but also perhaps they do need to worry about the fact that their constant takedown of mainstream politicians, of the whole political sphere, has enabled men like Trump and Farage to rise to the fore.
Me and Miren like to think we're funny, but we're not satirists. But we've got a couple of satirists here to talk about this with us now, a couple of excellent guests, and I'm just going to let them introduce themselves.
I'm Will Smith. I'm a writer and comedian, occasional actor. I worked on The Thick of It. I was also in it as Phil Smith, and I write on Veep, the kind of American Thick of It, and I've written a novel called Mainlander, set in 1987 on the island of Jersey. But it doesn't just appeal to fans of that year and that island. You know, if you're a fan of 1988 and the Isle of Man, I think you'll like it too.
My name's Richard Smith. I'm the managing editor of satirical news site News Thump. No relation, I should mention that, I guess. And I'm here to talk about satirical news on the internet.
Great. So I think the first question has to be, how do you satirize someone like Trump? Because he is in himself inherently ridiculous.
Yeah, and not only that, if you wrote him, it would be unbelievable because he's so psychologically transparent, isn't he? It's like you can see there's no layers. I mean, there are layers, but that you're aware of them. So it's like it would just feel really unsubtle, and you think nobody would behave like that. Nobody could hold those opinions. He's beyond. I mean, he's just remarkable. I mean, no, that's entirely the wrong word.
No,
he's despicable.
He is, and you're right that you couldn't write him because I think if you sat in the writer's room and pitched something that Donald Trump has done in the last year, it may be dismissed as ridiculous, but you might also then create an episode where they're trying to roll back from it and recover from the thing they said.
Yeah.
He doesn't do that, no. He just commits to it and doesn't care.
He doubles down, yeah.
which is strange.
If we came up with him on Veep, it just wouldn't get, you know, past the first kind of suggestion. It would be like, it's just...
That wouldn't happen.
Just way too crazy. But also when he, like, if you read, like, transcripts of his speeches and, like, things he says in the debates, it's, I mean, it actually works as brilliant comic prose because it's so mad and unpredictable. But it's almost like somebody with the debates at points, I thought it's like if Chris Morris or Armando Iannucci got hold of the footage and recut it to make him look mad.
On that point, we've got a clip I think that amply demonstrates exactly what you were just saying.
And he referred to my hands. If they're small, something else must be small. I guarantee you there's no problem.
So like you couldn't write that line, right?
No. Actually, I remember when I was over for people in LA, and it was for the Republican debate. And it was the one where, you remember, they all went out in the wrong order. They were standing in the corridor and we watched that again in the writer's room. And I remember Dave Mandel, the showrunner, going, I mean, we couldn't do that. It would be too mad. It would be too broad, too broadly comic. It was,
So what? So how do you get something with bite then on these kinds of guys? Because making politicians look ridiculous is one thing. Is there?
It's difficult. Well, I think the thing is you can't satirise the person because, you know, we'll agree. One of the things you do when you're trying to mock someone is you exaggerate their position. But you can't exaggerate their position because they've taken it to the nth degree. So what you do is you basically put them in a parallel universe almost, or create, you know, mock their position rather than the person themselves. So the things that we've done with Trump over the last 6 months have been taking things they've done and putting it so that it would never be believed. It's not fake news in the sense that you read it and go, oh, has he done that? It's, you know, puts Voldemort as Secretary of State, you know, that type of thing. And when he said, you know, we're not allowing any Muslims in the country, rather than mock that, we said, you know, we did a story where Native Americans were saying we can't allow any more Christians into the country until we can find out what the hell is going on. So you take the position and mock that rather than the individual who said it. It's difficult, though, because, like you say, with Trump, you don't know what he's going to say next. You really have no idea.
It's also difficult because with Trump, it's not like it has any visible effect and that he's never going to back down. Like you said, he's never going to apologise. And he doesn't even understand it, really. Like when he hits back at Saturday Night Live and he says, it's unfair. It's like, he doesn't understand that satire, it's not a balanced, it's not like an accurate impersonation. He just doesn't understand the point of it. But also he kind of feeds the fire because that he's giving them what they want which is great. I mean, I'm obviously on Saturday Night Live's side on this in this fight.
The thing is, he does hit back, and he hits back in quite an aggressive way. And we've seen that, like, Trump will go after journalists, and he said in this speech, I think it was back in like December 2015, that he basically stopped short of saying, "I would kill a journalist."
By the way, I hate some of these people, but I'd never kill them. I hate them. No, these people, I would never do that. Let's see. No, I wouldn't. I would never kill him, but I do hate him.
Can I just double check? He did actually win the Republican primary, and yes. He did actually win the presidential election. Because it just
does that make you worry? I mean, obviously, well, we're not saying he's actually going to go after the journalists and kill them, but what about legally? And even on Twitter, when he singles out an individual, like, that is frightening because he's got millions of supporters.
Well, it's quite interesting when I'm listening to him do that, and you can hear the laughs come in. And I remember really, I think it might have been John Harris in The Guardian, I think it was actually, who followed Trump and went to some rallies, and he compared it to, he said he's like a kind of carnival Barker and a showman. He said he did compare him to a stand-up as well. And sometimes I get the sense that Trump is going with the laugh in the room. And I'm not saying that's good, and I'm not saying that's not a defense of his policy. But I mean, he clearly shouldn't be president. You don't want somebody president who is just going to like go with a laugh. And you can feel him there when they get the laugh, and his teeth going back and forth on it. And it's not, you know, I don't think he's literally meaning it, but that's still terrifying that he would say that out loud. So,
but there's kind of a problem there for a satirist, right, as well. Because then if you're going with his sort of trash talking, almost like a wrestler or something, but then if you join in and hit him back, are you then kind of playing his game? You know, does he want you to?
That's actually a point I was going to make about the Saturday Night Live thing, is if he was smart, the thing that he would do would say, it's hilarious, I love it, I'd love to be on a show with Alec Baldwin, let me come on, let me do it. And that would totally new to them if he you know, kind of acted like he was in on the joke. But he doesn't even understand that that's the way to play it. He just hits back and goes, it's not funny, it's unfair. And they're just going to keep going. It's just...
They are, but he's saying it's unfunny, it's not fair, not to the people who are saying it. He's saying that for his core demographic, and they love him for it, which is, for me, is the more troubling aspect of Donald Trump. It's not the things he says. He's already rolled back on some of his more strange policies that he announced in the election process. But for me, it's more about the people who've been given... we've won. You know, we won now. And that's, the, you know, the alt-right, the racist demographic. Yeah. These are the people who suddenly feel empowered because their candidate won. That's more worrying to me than what Donald Trump says.
And looking sort of more UK-based, with someone like Nigel Farage, who laps up publicity, and I think has a slightly better sense of humour than Donald Trump in that he doesn't seem to get as offended. I don't know. Well, feel free to disagree. But with someone like him, when you satirise him and when you give him that publicity that he craves, isn't that just kind of, well, worsening the problem?
Yeah, I mean, I've come to the point on Farage where I just say, I don't want to hear him anymore. I don't want to see him anymore. He doesn't speak for anyone. I know he thinks he does, but he's... You know, he's not leader of a party. He's not a member of parliament. Why are we listening to this guy and not anyone? No, his opinion is, to me, is as important as anyone else on the street. And his opinions are disgusting. So let's not listen to him anymore. So I don't even want to make fun of him. You know, I just wanted to shut up and go away. Yeah.
Are you guys still in your crosshairs?
We still do Farage all the time. Even recently, you know, we had a popular story on the site where we had Nigel Farage rewriting the nativity so that the heroes were the innkeepers who said they were full. So, you know, but again, we're not satirizing him. We're satirizing his position. His position is this. This is why it's patently ridiculous. The thing you were saying about, you know, can he laugh at himself? So about 18 months ago, I don't know if you remember, there was a UKIP councillor who blamed the floods that we had on gay marriage.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
So we did a story the day it happened.
I'd blank that out.
But yeah. we did a story that said that UKIP had a new policy where they were going to send married gays to drought-hit areas around the world. And that was, you know, fine. And then one of our writers started a Twitter account called UKIP Weather.
I saw that.
Yeah, it gathered like a couple of 100,000 fans.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
And it went viral in like the week that it was launched. And Nigel Farage was on This Week following Newsnight on BBC Two. And Andrew Neil said, have you seen this? And they put some of the tweets up on the screen. And he said, ha-ha, yes, it's very funny. But you could see on his face...
Oh, it was getting to him?
That it was like, ha-ha. I mean, we've all seen Nigel Farage laugh, right? Because it's the ubiquitous photo of him with a pint and a fag and grinning his face off. He wasn't really enjoying it. And I took a lot of personal satisfaction from that, even though I didn't write the jokes. It was one of our writers that did. That it obviously did rankle with him a little bit that his party was being made to look ridiculous.
Because that's an interesting point. Do you think that these people, Trump and Farage and people like them, care that much how they're seen? I was really rewatching some Thick of It last night, taking this as an excuse to just watch the Thick of It. While I was supposed to be working. But anyway, it seemed like the era that was satirizing was an era of politicians who are sort of anally obsessed with exactly how they're seen in the media.
Yeah,
I think we've got a clip of Malcolm Tucker speaking to a journalist and trying to change one word in some copy.
Okay, go ahead and print unforeseeable. Listen, see when I tell your wife about you and Angela Heaney at the Blackpool conference, what would be best? An email, a phone call, or what?
So that's them trying to control the tiny micromanager. And you get the impression with Trump and Farage that actually, and those like them, that actually they don't care so much about the minutiae as long as they're in the press somehow. But is that not true?
I think so. And also, certainly with something like Trump, he'll just sort of lie. His way of hitting back is just you know, like the Vanity Fair, they gave his restaurant a bad review. So he just goes, nobody's reading Vanity Fair. It's going down the toilet. Graylin Carter's going to be sacked. Who, by the way, is the man who started the small hands thing and who Trump sends pictures of his hands every year to, which is insane. but then again, it backfires because Vanity Fair subscriptions go, as does failing New York Times. Every time he hits back, it kind of, it's he's doing journalism a favour. So his kind of response is just to kind of front it out. But with Farage, I think it gets to him in that I know that he often complains about, oh, there's no right-wing comedians, doesn't he? Does he ever get upset that there are no kind of left-wing hedge fund managers? I mean, it's just these are the jobs people are drawn to. It's just, you know, he only wants balance when it suits him.
I think you said something interesting there, Josh, about, you know, how do you know when it's true? And I think the truth element is important. You know, whether we like it or not, this whole post-truth era is where we are now. And the facts do not matter. I wish they did. I really wish they did, but they don't. Trump gave a perfect example a couple of days ago when he was talking about the Russian hacking of emails.
Oh, God, why did no one
mention it?
They did.
Hillary literally did on the stage next to him in front of 50 million people. She said it right there and then. But that doesn't matter because him saying, oh, why didn't they raise it, means he's got 100 million people in America going, yeah, that's right, because facts don't matter.
That was the one where his response was, you're the puppet. No, you're the puppet, like he was 7 years old.
Such a nasty lady.
I mean, that.
Just like, well, I still can't believe he won.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You touched on another interesting point, which is this whole fake news thing. So it would have been, you know, the case that 4 years ago when The Onion or The Daily Mash or News Thump, you know, wrote an article, people were like, oh, that's clearly satire. Now that we've got actual fake news being spread and we've got a president-elect tweeting stuff that is objectively not true, do you guys worry, particularly you, Richard, do you worry that sometimes your articles will be taken as facts?
Has that happened?
It has happened, yes. And it's happened... times when we found it. So the first time it ever happened was when the site was very new, and we did a fake Facebook profile of a guy called Musa Kusa, who was the foreign secretary of Iraq. So it was during the second Iraq. And it was, you know, make a post, and it was William Hague replying, and it was basically about him leaving and trying to escape Iraq. And it was patently made up. And the Sunday Times ran it, but no, they didn't read it, do it as real.
Okay.
But they were too subtle in explaining that it was fake.
Right.
So a lot of people did believe what they read and thought, oh my God, this is terrible, blah, blah, blah. And it created all sorts of a furore. And at the time, I found that amusing. Over time, it's happened more often. But I don't like it. It's not what we want, people laughing with us, not angrily
not
sharing.
Not using it to precisely support the position you're trying to satirise.
I think the largest time it happened was, we all remember David Cameron's hug a hoodie thing from years ago. So when Jeremy Corbyn was fighting for the leadership and everyone was saying he was very soft on terrorism, we did a story where Jeremy Corbyn announced a new policy, which was hug a jihadi. obviously, completely untrue, and everything was made up. But the BNP shared it on their page,
oh my God.
It went viral through the very right-wing, racist demographics, and that got into the press, and people picked it up as you know, they can't believe they've fallen for this. Now, at the time, we thought that was hilarious because the people we were actually mocking were the ones who believed it.
Mm.
But you're right in that it's kind of dangerous when you look at it, because there will be people who read that and it just reinforced their views. Not our intention at all. You know, absolutely do not want that. So there is an element that you think, you know what, well, but I don't think we can take responsibility for the way that people interpret things, particularly on our site where it's made very, very clear that everything's made up. There's literally in the headline, it says spoof and satire. We have an about page which says we make everything up. We're on Snopes. It's, you know, it's obvious we're made up. But you're right, there are other sites that don't do that. And that is a concern. I think people like Facebook and Google are obviously looking at it. I don't know what the answer is, but something needs to be done, because you're right. There are things that are published that are objectively incorrect. You know, they are demonstrably factless. There's no basis to the report. But they go viral because it conforms people's views. You know, they're thinking, well, that supports my opinion, therefore I'm going to share it.
And likewise, and I'm not saying this at all, but do you ever have the accusation levelled at you that you're like an echo chamber for people who already support your... He's comedically in, it's not changing anything.
To be fair, only three or four times every day.
Oh, God, sorry. Because I don't have much truck with that myself. Like, I've read articles, you know, in The Guardian, of sort of opinion pieces of people saying, well, Samantha Bee and John Oliver and Colbert and Seth Meyers, they're preaching the converted, they're not having any effect, and it's just in a closed loop. But I kind of think if that's all they do, I find it very cathartic to watch them, and like with your work as well, to have somebody express things that I... feel, and it's a release, and so even if it is just the echo chamber, I kind of think that's a really good thing.
I'm comfortable in it.
I'm happy. Yeah.
Did you not have that with Veep as well? People saying that about the show?
No, I don't think no, because it's kind of Veep is kind of look saying the whole. It's more attacking the whole system really than any one particular politician. I mean, Selina Meyer's not based on any specific person. There's no, I mean, so no, it didn't apply, and nor with Thicker.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we do get that accusation, right? That, you know, we get accused all the time of being a left-wing propagandist mouthpiece, you know, the liberal elite and all that sort of stuff.
Fine.
We have two or three writers that would be very offended by that. And we do mock all sides. Now, the simple fact is, and we'll all know this, satire works best when it's punching to power, right?
Yeah.
So when we very first started the site, Labour was still in power. So the majority of jokes were about Gordon Brown and Tony Blair. That changes as the government changes. So, of course, the government of the day are going to be the brunt of most of the jokes that you make. That doesn't mean we don't mock Labour. It doesn't mean we don't mock the Green Party. It doesn't mean we don't mock the people that sometimes we agree with if they do something worth mocking. And I like to think we do that. But people sometimes call for balance and, you know, do the air quotes. What does that mean? As if you do, oh, you've done one story about UKIP, therefore you've got to do another one about the Green Party. That's not balance.
Yeah, they're not as ridiculous. It's harder to make jokes about the Green Party.
Of course it is.
Most of their policies are sensible. It's just...
Precisely.
And I know that's my subjective point of view, but I'm also right.
But, I mean, is it even remotely fair to say that satirists perhaps bear some responsibility for... denigrating mainstream politicians? Because I was listening to Hillary Clinton on Between Two Ferns with Zach Galifianakis. I just wanted to play the end of that interview.
Well, this has been a lot of fun, Mrs. Clinton. We should stay in touch. What's the best way to reach you? Email?
You've got mail.
And listening to that now, it's no longer quite so funny because the emails were such a big thing and they did trip her up. And I'm not for a minute saying that Between Two Ferns is the reason why she didn't win.
I mean, there are so many factors, and that's the thing. I think the thing we have to remember with Trump when you look back is, and I was wrong about these predictions, but I was in good company. Springsteen also. it was a fluke. I mean, it's like it's 100,000 voters in the swing states. If they'd gone the other way, there's so many factors that we could all recite that put him in there. And so it's not like you look back and go, it was the fault of satire or Comey or specific thing. But I don't think, I don't think satirists went for her as much as they went for Trump. Right. And I think that may have amplified Trump's, noise, essentially. I mean, he was all over the news all the time because he was saying ridiculous things and then everyone's tweeting back at him and trying to do jokes about him. And then that, you kind of raise him to a level where, I mean, it didn't seem credible that he was going to win, but it's still, it's publicity, isn't it?
It is, and I'd love to sit here and think that we have the power to create a populist political movement. I really don't think we do. I'd love to claim that. No, absolutely not. If satire was capable of creating that, it would have done it back in the 60s and the 70s, because it's always been there. Our politicians and our leaders have always been the subject of mocking. You go back to the days of Spitting Image, obviously pre-internet, but if that was capable of creating a movement like this, it probably would have happened then. Do we bear a level of responsibility? Well, maybe. I honestly don't know the answer to that. I personally don't think so, but I'm happy to be proven wrong.
What you mean for kind of chipping away at the system and making people think?
I
mean,
like certainly, you said about Veep, for example.
Yeah, people talk. Yeah. And people have said that about Veep in the thick of it. That you make it look like everyone's in it for themselves, and you're kind of undermining the trust in politics. You think, well, we're kind of reflecting what we see more than that. But I don't know. I don't feel it's not my fault.
I think the way I look at it, if the system and the people who take the primary positions within that system allow themselves to be mocked in the way that we do, that's not our fault. Mm. It's kind of a duty almost to pick them up on the things that are mockworthy. If they behave badly, if they have policies that are patently ridiculous, it's kind of a duty to point that out, right?
But it's also because Trump was kind of outside that system, as he put it, but certainly outside the norms of acceptable behaviour within the political system. It's like, I think his supporters just were like, well, he's a breath of fresh air. Well, not particularly fresh, actually, stinky air. But it was that thing of he's not like the others, and he wasn't kind of held to the same standards at all. It's like, if you were a regular political candidate and you were caught on tape bragging about sexually abusing women, that's game over.
That should have been the end of it.
Yeah.
I mean, in any normal...
Well, I would have ended it in the impression of the guy
guy who's disabled.
And one thing I wanted to ask, and I think it's something that Armando Iannucci has said already, but can we ever have another show like Veep? Or is it, because I think, didn't he say something along the lines of, we can't make these sorts of shows anymore because what's happening in the real world has just got too ridiculous?
I don't think you could do the thick of it anymore. I mean, I know that, everyone's too busy and Armando's moved on to films and stuff, so he doesn't want to do it anyway. But I just think, the politicians are doing it for us, the whole... I mean, did you see that? Tim Shipman had a great tweet kind of with loads of replies about, what was your favourite thick of it moment of 2016? And you read through and you go, these are all amazing. And likewise with Veep, comedically, Veep is in a good place with Trump. And Trump is terrible for the country, but it's good for Veep because if Hillary had got in, it would have felt like we were trying to sort of mirror her or satirise her, and she's never been the kind of the target of the satire specifically, and now Celine is out of office. It's like she's not going to be compared to Trump. So I think the show will survive. But I think if she was a president within the show now, it would be very hard. In the same way that with The West Wing, once George Bush came in, then it kind of slightly felt out of sync with reality, and it kind of lost sort of something at that point for some people.
Well, bearing those moments in mind then, and we're going to have to move towards the end soon, I'm afraid, but we've talked about some of the ways that it's difficult to satirise some of these things, but what is funny in politics at the moment? What's the funniest thing at the moment in politics? What would you? What gives you a laugh both, and a bit of a light relief?
We're both sagging our shoulders now. Yeah. Nothing. Yeah. There's not a lot of joy in it.
No, and I think it's... the type of humour that seems to do well at the moment is not so much about individuals, but about positions.
Mm.
So if you look at the Brexit debate in the UK, which has dominated everything and will for the next few years, there is the winners and the losers. You've got the Ramoners and the Brexiters, and there's a big battle between the two. And that battle is inherently funny because things happen that kind of offset against their position. The Brexit bus was a godsend. That thing's going to be photoshopped into time immemorial. That's just going to go on forever. But as things change, you've got that offset between the two. So I think that whole positioning between the people who voted to leave and the people who voted to remain, they're not going to come together anytime soon. So I think that's going to be a rich vein of comedy for the next 2 or 3 years.
I mean, there's humour, but it's kind of depressing. It's like, I mean, for me, it's just you kind of look at people like Liam Fox and you think, is this really the best person that we have? He looks like someone who's won a competition to be a minister for a day. He just looks a bit kind of like confused and happy at the same time. Like, oh, this is fun. But he doesn't, you're not up to it.
No.
None of them are. I mean, and you know, and you've just got this farce with them going, oh, it'll only take 18 months, be fine. And then other people going, you'll take 10 years. Oh, you'd stop being so gloomy.
It is. And, you know, you look at things, the statement, Brexit means Brexit. Ah. And again, that would have been laughed out the room.
Absolutely.
You wouldn't, you know, oh, no, Brexit means Brexit. You know, can we get away with that?
I remember David Davis at some point said that, you know, there were kind of figures about how much it's going to cost us. And he was like, look, yeah, okay. If you put in certain, factors in, when you start that calculation, then you get that result. But if you change the factors and the predictions, then you get a much more optimistic result. You think, yeah, that's exactly the same as saying, yeah, it'll be fine. It's not, you know, I mean, I know it's all speculation and who knows, but, why not listen to the economists and the people?
Oh, we don't do experts anymore.
No.
Do you not get the memo?
That's crazy. Come on.
What do they know?
I think that's all we've got time for. I'd like to thank you both so much for coming on. It was so much fun. Thank you to everyone at home for listening. Don't forget that you can catch us every week on SoundCloud, iTunes and Acast. Please do subscribe, rate us, like us, do all of those things. If you can't wait till next week, you can visit us at newsweek.com or pick up a copy of Newsweek.